Welcome to the T&D podcast brought to you by TomTom. We think you're trucking awesome. You deserve a trucking awesome app. That's why today we're excited to talk about the ultimate trucking companion, TomTom Go Navigation. With premium features designed to make every delivery a breeze, Go Navigation ensures you reach your destination efficiently and stress-free. Hello and welcome back to the Trucking Driver Podcast. I've got a special guest with me today, somebody who I've wanted to get in the podcast for a long time, somebody who a name you may be familiar with. It is Mandy Wannerton, truck driver extraordinaire.
Nah. Too kind, Dougie.
Yeah, so Mandy, you've got a long career with trucks. You've gone from driving them to becoming a trainer, and I would just like to think if we could have a chat today about your career with trucks and your various adventures and progress over the years.
Yeah, no problem at all. Well, it all started third generation of transport family, as many drivers of my age are. That's how I came into it. So my playground was the yard. My Wendy house was my dad's cab. I used to live for the weekends and the school holidays to go out with him. And I think it just stemmed from there. You know what you do and you do what you know. Yeah. And that's how I got into it.
Yeah. What kind of lorries were they running at the time?
Now, you know something. I knew you were going to ask this. Now, I've noticed this over the years. All of my driver mates who are fellas, they can tell you the engine, the colour, you know, axles, everything. They know every single truck that they've driven. Me, I couldn't tell you if you asked me, which you're doing now. So I can remember Dad, funnily enough, having one of the first DAFs. And he took that all the way over Africa, and he was a long-distance driver.
Did he go down through Spain into Morocco?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. He's done Iran, Iraq, many, many, many places. He would be away for months at a time. And that was without mobile phones, obviously, then. And I can remember going with my mum and my brother once a week down to the town, and getting a telex message would come through. That would be our only contact with Dad whilst he was away. And some weeks we'd get there and there would be none, because obviously the places that he just wasn't able to do. But yeah, he had adventures. He was one of the original pioneers back in the 70s. And many, many travels he did, many travels.
So yeah, you were one of these kids that grew up being able to go out with their dad in the truck in school holidays and...
Yeah, definitely.
As time moves on, and you know, kids aren't generally able to do that anymore. A chap sent me some details of the company that he was working for, and he was able to take his grandson out in the truck, which is quite... I was like, oh, that's quite unusual. It's fantastic you're able to do that, but I don't think you can put a price on like the value of what that provided. And the amount of drivers that it produced from being able to have that grounding, and like it puts traveling into your blood from an early age, like that desire to get out and about and see new places. And once you've got that, I don't think it ever leaves you. And it's such a shame. I do kind of wonder, like, it would be good if like the transport associations or like we would be able to somehow launch a campaign to have like an organized, because you get kids go to the work week, to have an organised kids in cabs week where it's cleared with a lot of different companies, so people know who's in the cabs and where and what's going to be happening. So it's all done safely in a nice modern way. I think that would be such a great thing to be able to do.
And I think that when they stopped kids going into work with their parents or aunts or uncles or anything like this, that's when we first started to see the drop in drivers, which we have now. because, as I said, you do what you know what you do. And if you're immersed in transport, you know, then you can see all the different areas that there. It's not just driving. You have the mechanical side of it. Now you also have the technological side of it. You have design. So there's an awful lot of people that are not getting exposed to this great industry of ours in one way or another. And the industry is missing out, because by the time it comes to career choices, it's not on people's radar. So they just don't want to come into it. And I think that's a real shame. I really, really do. And yeah, kids back into trucks, that's what I say.
Yeah, it's difficult as well if you're wanting to leave school at 16, then you can't obviously start driving till you're 18, and insurance costs have gone through the roof recently. And insurance companies aren't helping at all with being able to get young drivers out in trucks. And I've always made the point that when you're looking at somebody who is young that's likely to be driving a truck, it's not the same as them going out in some sort of hot hatch performance car. If you need to look at the individual person and go, yes, they might be 18, 19, 20 or whatever, but this person has probably been around trucks their whole life, and they're you would probably find that they're more skilled than you would think in a lot of ways if they're coming from backgrounds of transport or agriculture. But the insurance companies don't look at things in that way, which makes things adds an extra layer of difficulty. I've spoken to companies who would happily put younger drivers out in their trucks and want to, but the cost is just off the charts to do it.
Yeah. Well, you see, funnily enough, I always knew that I wanted to go into driving. And my first job would have been as a trailer boy, double manning and things like this. And this was back in the 80s. And nobody would take me on, although growing up in this industry and knew a lot of people, because there was a lot of nights out and it was cab sharing and things, and nobody wanted a young teenager in their cab. So I ended up joining the army, which was WRAC then, and I went there at 18, and I was very, very lucky. I got my licenses and I was able to use them. So when I came out several years later, you know, in my early 20s, I'd had quite a bit of experience behind me and I never looked back. So there's ways and means of doing it, but I still think we need to be getting kids into the cabs a lot earlier somehow. So yeah, let's get that sorted.
So when you went into the army and applied for, obviously there's so many different things that you can do in the army. When you go in and you're joining up, can you sort of say that this is what I want to do? I want to be in and around vehicles.
That's exactly what I did. I went into the WRAC Women's Royal Army Corps and I applied to be a driver, which I was. And I was very fortunate as well, because I was sent to smaller postings where they had an MT section, motor transport section. And that's where I got the different licenses. So from staff car close protection right through to my HGV. So, yeah, I had a good time. Very, very good time in there, and a great grounding, good foundation for what I've done.
Yeah. Do you think for a lot of young people today that something like that would be of value? I know that the army numbers are down and they can struggle to recruit for things. Do you think that would be sort of a benefit if we could get more people to sign up?
Yeah, but it comes down to the individual again. Obviously, that kind of organisation, it doesn't suit everybody. So it is down to the individual. But again, recruiting, whether it's for drivers, whether it's for the forces, it's all down. And I don't know what the answer is, Dougie. Mm-hmm. I really, really don't. I don't know whether these things now are too difficult to get into, or whether it's because everybody's pushing the degree way to get into work rather than vocations. I don't know. I really, really don't know. It's just a dire situation, whatever side you're looking at things, really.
Yeah, you do see people shouting online going, bring back national service, that'll sort them all out.
Well, maybe national service isn't a bad thing, but I don't think it can go to how it was all those years ago. Maybe looking at some kind of vocational, from mechanics to woodwork to plumbing to catering, driving, whatever. Maybe life skills that we don't teach at schools. Maybe it's that opportunity that's missing.
There is absolutely not enough value placed on vocational qualifications for people that can do things. I mean, we've spoken about that before on the podcast, whereby there's been such a big push for people to say go to university and get a degree And yet, yes, it's important to get a degree from many industries. But then again, there's a lot of pointless degrees out there where people have gone to uni for 4 or 5 years. They haven't really gained life experience, run up a debt, and then they've got a degree that's not worth a lot of use in the real world. Whereas if they'd gone and learned to do a trade, then that's you can set for life in that respect. And I really think that there should be much more value and much more promotion placed on getting people to do jobs that like a thing, whether it's electrics, plumbing, whether it's going into driving mechanics,
nursing. Before, you used to have two ways into nursing. You'd have auxiliary, and obviously you'd have the educational route as well. And when they stopped the auxiliary, I think overnight they lost 40% of people who would have come into the industry. You know, so that's just mad. That's crazy.
What was the auxiliary route? That was like doing an apprenticeship, going out as a on the job.
You're learning on the job. Yeah, you were learning on the job. Yeah. You know, so that was really sad when that happened.
Yeah, really mean.
Education is good. Education you do need, but not everybody has their wired to learning by route. A lot of people are hands-on and very practical, you know, and that has to be looked at. Like, all industries are missing out on really, really good people because of going down the degree route.
Yeah, I mean, my nephew is 11. He's going to be 12 this year, and his dad, my brother-in-law, they own like a garage business. Where we do a lot with taxis, and he goes there in the holidays a lot of the time and is in about the garage at weekends, helping out with things. And he's been diagnosed with ADHD and being on the autism spectrum as well, being like sort of bit Asperger's. So he's he's not always great in a classroom environment. He can't focus on things. But it's interesting when you give him a tattoo, he's very hands-on, and he's surprisingly skilled at mechanical tasks. And it's got the point. Now, my sister said he would quite happily kind of leave school now and go and work sort of full time. Obviously, you need to get your qualifications in the essential parts of like maths and English to do all that. But he's like, the value of what he's going to get out of school in the next few years is probably quite minimal. And it's a shame for a lot of kids like that, because the schools then just think, oh, they don't have great grades necessarily. They're maybe a little bit disruptive, and they just want to go and shove them out the door as quickly as they can. Get them out the door, whereby they should really be looking beyond the sort of academic side of things and saying, here, well, maybe these guys are more sort of hands-on. And I found it really interesting with his skills on sort of mechanical stuff. I'd mentioned he was on the computer game Euro Truck Simulator. He worked out how to use the 16-speed manual in a day. He was able playing the game, and I didn't have to tell him anymore to do stuff like that. So, there's so much more that could be done in that respect. And I don't understand what this obsession is with degrees. A lot of the guys that I was at school with are the most disruptive ones, have gone on to be the most successful. They run their own businesses now.
Put them in the right environment and people flourish, don't they?
Yes. Yes. So you came out of the army.
Yeah.
What was the next step after that? Did you go into truck driving after that?
Yes, I did. And my dad and myself, we brought a couple of trucks, and we did several years of European work. So we were running steel out of Wrexham to Belgium on a regular basis. And also, we were getting down to Syracuse in Italy and all of France, Germany. It was superb, fantastic 3 years. It was really, really good. So there'd be the four of us running the two trucks. We were double man for the longer journeys. And we'd have two people running on the steel as well. We used to chop and change. It was a good time.
So would that have been, would that have been would that have been sort of the open borders with the EU and all that? Then you would
yes, it was. Oh, it was all open. It was all open then.
Yeah, because it's so many drivers, once they start doing European work, they never want to go back from it, because they say that driving in Europe is so much more enjoyable than it is being here in the UK in terms of facilities and, well, quite often the road network is not the same everywhere. But how did you find it, like being able to experience the different cultures and the different countries? Was it?
It was absolutely superb. I really, really enjoyed every single moment of it, and made some very good friends along the way. Friends who are great friends now, to be honest with you. And we all go back, oh, in the good old days. It's not so much the good old days, but it was certainly different. There was no mobile phones. There was no sat navs. You know, we used to have to find telephone boxes in all these places once we'd done one delivery, the drop, to phone P&O to find out where we were going next, and scribble it down on a bit of paper and off you go. So it used to start off when I used to plan the route. I used to plan it through countries first, and then cities, towns, and then invariably postmen, always very good. They would be very, very helpful. Farmers were incredibly helpful. And many a time I followed somebody on the back of a tractor. They've been on a tractor, and I followed them down these tiny roads and places to where I want to go. People really helpful. People really, really helpful in things like that. Parking up, services, nights out, weekends away. There's always be a group of drivers, you know, English, Irish, Scottish, French, all of them. And there was a camaraderie then, which I think we've lost again through technology. You know, people plug in to their sat nav or in their phones to find something. Whereas before, you'd pull up at a truck stop, you'd go in, you'd ask somebody, you'd have a detailed map scribbled on the back of a napkin and all of this advice and things like this. And that's gone. But friendships were forged then, and people did look out for each other more so than now. Now I think there's a suspicion amongst our industry, and I don't know why or where it's come from. But typically I came back from France a few months ago and came back on the train. And before COVID, it was a very sociable environment to be in.
Is this a truck train?
Yes, there were tables there where you could sit and you could talk to people. You would have a cup of coffee, you could have a chat. Whereas now they're all very much forward facing. It's like being on a bus. So again, people are shut off from one another. Everybody's on their phones. And I just think now, I think driving is quite lonely now for many people. It's always been a job that suits people who like their own company. And it suited me because I'm a very sociable recluse, so to speak. So I could dip in and out with people and situations and things, but I don't mind my own company at all, which is the same for most drivers. But you did have the time then, like say you would pull up, you would eat at a truck stop. Again, they're all going. You know, you'd have conversations with people. You'd make friends, some people you'd never see again, but you had that human interaction, which was really, really good for people's mental state. But that seems to have gone now, and people are a lot lonelier, I think, driving trucks nowadays.
Yeah.
You only have to see that, you read about it, it's a big topic. Driver's mental health is a huge topic. You know, and you can see why. And it's a shame. It's like, again, before you used to pull up at delivery places and everybody would pitch in. You see people that you've known, you'd meet people, people would help loading and unloading with each other, all of this kind of thing. Whereas now it's a case of go and sit behind that barrier, handing your keys. And again, people are on their phones. So it's a very lonely job. You can spend too much time in your own mind, I think, now being a lorry driver.
Yeah, I think there's been certain benefits to social media in some ways, because it has brought groups of drivers together that wouldn't normally have been able to sort of would never have like met each other. And you've got some sort of thriving online communities, but then you do see at truck stops at night, it's like 7 o'clock at night, and the place is dead. All the curtains are shut on the trucks, and everybody's kind of sat in and say they're on social media. There is that there's not so much sort of face-to-face camaraderie and chatting and things like that. I mean, it does still exist, but not to the extent that it did before. It's nice when I'm out in some of the demonstrator lorries because if it's been seen online, then it gives people sort of a reason to get. It's like an icebreaker. So people can be quite, oh, I've seen it on Facebook or Instagram or something like that. Yeah, I read the magazine, so people will come up and have a chat with you in truck stops and things, which is always nice. But in terms of like loneliness, mental health, it is something that it needs more focus, and people need to. It's difficult to speak about it openly, to say I am struggling with this, I'm not happy. It's very much the prerogative of the lorry drivers, their blokes in particular, to just get the head down and keep on going and going. So I don't want to bother anybody. And there's been some good movements in recent years, like the Breaker truck show and all the movement around that, and the focus and promoting and send drivers to like get help and speak out, because of like support, there is support that's there for people. So
social media is good, so is technology, but I think we all need a healthy balance.
Yeah, everything in moderation,
but it's very difficult to have that interaction, build friendships and things like this when you're parked up for the night, if the place that you're parked up in is one of the most inhospitable places you'll ever see. So why wouldn't you stay in your cab with the curtains drawn, you know, talking to people online, when what's to offer outside isn't great in any way, shape or form?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I still like encounter like regular. There's so many great people in the industry. But in terms of it, you still do encounter like helpful people who do anything to sort of help you out. But I've never met sort of like a bigger variety of interesting people as I have done in transport. The sheer variety of people that have come into it. There's people that have given up jobs being dentists to go and become lorry drivers, because just that attraction has just pulled them in, and they can't resist it.
That's true. I have a friend who was an architect and a very successful one, and now driving, and he loves it, absolutely loves it. So he dips in and out of the driving, and he's well happy.
Fantastic. And the fact that we keep going in the face of almost sort of constant adversity, I'd say, we've had the manual gearbox week posts on our social media this week, which have been the most viral thing we've ever done. The original post got 3.1 million views. And I think with all the kind of bad news, it's almost been like, felt like there's been a war on drivers this year, with all the sort of clampdowns from authorities one way or the other. And I think that sort of post, just a bit of nostalgia and a bit of lightheartedness, just to look back fondly on a lot of trucks, iconic trucks and things from back in the day, and marking the end of an era. I think people have really enjoyed that sort of side of things.
Looking back is lovely, looking back through rose-tinted glasses.
Yes.
Interesting to see, though, how many of us who all enjoyed the manuals, you know, would actually want to go and do a full week's work, let's say, in a manual box now through the cities with the traffic and everything. Let's see then if it's still so rose-tinted. Yeah, they come out of it.
That's
a different story, isn't it? That's a different type of thing.
Yeah, it's off. I mean, you would tend to find that the ones that were still being sold were up in the more extreme parts of the country, where the lorry is going to be spending time on the open road or whatever. Mm. It's not going to be sitting shunting between the M40, M42, M6.
Could you imagine?
Yeah. All that kind of thing, yeah. So.
Gosh. The one thing, though, which would be interesting, I always think, is that since we've gone over to automated boxes, automatics and things, you know, just how many drivers' knees have been saved?
It definitely, like with older trucks, that was certainly, it would take a toll on the driver, especially if you go back to the day, some of the 70s trucks, which had like no cab insulation on them, and the guys would be deafened, they would have bad hips and knees, and of course...
bad shoulders, because really poor ventilation in the truck, so the windows were always open, so bad shoulders, backs, knees. You only have to look at my dad and you'd know that.
Yeah, it's a totally fundamentally different way of driving, and I'd always say, like, a manual is something that you would want with your heart rather than your head.
That's well put, yes.
And so if you've got a good truck with a manual box and you've got good roads and you're having a good day and everything, it is a really, it's a kind of pure driving experience, but it's also a much more full-on one. And
you're more connected. Yeah, you're more connected.
Yeah, you're more connected with it. But then again, when you're doing something, you're pulling 15-hour bays, stuff like that. I mean, the modern autos are, you know, so good. You can't change down a gear on a hill as quickly as those autos can, but it just flicks it down a gear. If you were trying to, you just can't do that by the time you've shifted it a bit. And a lot of the technology in trucks that's come in, that started to come in sort of with Euro 5, the early automatics, a lot of the earlier driver systems that people are suspicious of and don't like today, in actual fact, these systems have improved beyond all recognition from how they were first implemented.
Well, the first of many things, always a learning curve, isn't it? It's always the introduction of anything new. And there will always be hiccups as well. You know, this is the way, this is progress. This is how things change and how we, with the vehicles that we have today. You know, so yes, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, completely different to what we have now.
Yeah.
And that's what you'd expect.
Mm-hmm. Now, with your time, you spent 3 years, that you said, driving to Europe.
Yeah.
So what came after that? You had a good long run going back and forth to the continent. What was the next step?
I actually went and I moved to Malta. I went to live in Malta for a couple of years.
I've never been to Malta. It looks lovely.
It is. It's a rock in the med and it's superb. It is. It's great. The one thing I did miss was the seasons, because obviously being in the med, you only have 2 weeks of the year when the island is green and full of colour, which is late February. After that, it's just sunbaked. It's just sunbaked and blue. But that was really good. I was able to work whilst I was out there, although I had to leave Malta every 3 months and nip across to Italy on the ferry and then come back in. I was working and I applied for a driving job for Falzon Service Station, which was an independent fuel company on the island, which was fuel bunkering and looking after yachts. But sadly, they wouldn't give me the job. I turned up and they liked what I did and background and everything like this. Mm-hmm. But they wouldn't give me the job because they thought I'd be a danger on the roads. And it wasn't so much because of my driving. It was more for the fact that back then there wasn't many female truck drivers. And they were worried that other road users would just be sort of a bit bamboozled by seeing this and that it would be a problem for them. So I ended up being a debt collector for them for my time there.
A debt collector? So what were you, like...
A debt collector for them,
yeah. What were you doing, like going around knocking on doors with a baseball bat?
Not so much with a baseball bat, no. It was a lot more civil than that. But with some of the hotels and some of the marinas and things like this. So, yeah, it was totally different. It was a different way of life, but that was great. Enjoyed that. And then when I came back from there, I went and started working for Bleat Customer, one of the larger fridge customers here in the UK. And it was through them that I was introduced to DAF trucks, because I was working for this company and I became an assessor with them as well as a driver. And one of the things that I had to do was obviously learn about the product, and they run an awful lot of DAFs. So I went down to Dafydd Teim at the time, and I had a couple of days there with Bridget Kingston, who I'm proud to say was my mentor, and were it not for him, I wouldn't have been doing the work that I do for DAF now.
So what was Richard Kingston's role at DAF?
Well, he was the press and demonstration driver at the time, but he would also get involved with sort of people like me from companies that would come along to learn about the product. So you would spend a couple of days with Richard and you would learn all about the truck and best way to drive them, how to get the best out of the truck for least input on yourself. He was a great advocate of armchair driving, about letting the truck do the work. And I learned an awful lot from him, as I believe many people did, and a lot of your colleagues within the truck magazines, you know, and yourself has spent some time with Richard over the past. So I had a couple of days with him, and on the last day he was sat there in the passenger seat and we're just generally chit-chatting, and he asked me where I saw myself in a few years' time, and I cheekily said, where you're sat. And that was the start of a good friendship, and the rest, they say, is history. So from there I've been associated and working with DAF and some smaller customers over the years. When Richard left, I applied for and I became their present demonstration driver through their training as well. So it's been full on, and I get to play with trucks now, and it's great. I can honestly say that my license has taken me around the world, and I've loved every minute of it.
It's a good career progression there, because the thing with driving and getting into transport as well as, I mean, you can choose to be just, you know, just have a driving job, turn up and get in and drive home. But there is an enormous variety of different, I mean, there's different driving jobs and different sectors in itself, so many different specialities, which then branch off into other areas as well. Like you say, the training side of things, which gets you out and you meet so many different people and get to go so many different places. So
you get involved so much as well. As we say, the explosion in technology has changed our industry. It's just blown it out of the water. And to be involved with so many different things is superb. A little while back, we were involved with the platooning side of things. So we were actually running the platooning trucks here in the UK and putting it through live trials. And that was something which never expected would ever happen. You know, so opportunities come. And I think for me, I've never said no. Not all of the opportunities that have come my way have worked out best, but I don't regret any of them. And one door open to another, you get to meet so many different people. And just roll with it, basically. Don't be afraid to say yes to things that come your way.
You're listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, brought to you by TomTom. The TomTom Go navigation offers a specific set of truck features. You can set your cargo and truck dimensions for specific routes so you can drive confidently on suitable roads, making every journey efficient and reliable. Truck yeah. So, I mean, with such a long and varied career in transport, taking you all over the world, there must have been some places in particular that stood out to you. Can you think of any particular incidents or people that you encountered that took a shine to you? Maybe some scary incidents over the years.
Well, there is definitely one that springs to mind when you said that. I was out in Nigeria with Ron. We'd gone out to do some training for a company, their construction company, who'd just taken on over 100 DAF tippers. So whenever we were out there, we were always met airside by armed guard, and they'd be with us 24/7 all the time that we were there, no matter what we were doing. And always kept safe. It was just a crazy, crazy situation. But the actual owner of the company, the chief, and he was a chief, and he'd actually been knighted by our late queen as well. He really took a shine to me and Ron. And he would come and pick us up in the evening with this great cavalcade of vehicles, as you would call it. He'd be there in his chauffeur-driven Hummer, and there'd be the large pickup trucks in front and behind, and there'd be all these guys with the guns, and there'd be it was just crazy to see. And he'd pick us up, and he used to take us out to meet all his friends and everything. And we were his white people from London. That's how he would introduce us. And there was this one particular night we were coming to the end of our time there, and he was taking us out to dinner. He was taking us out to dinner in Lagos. So, as always.
So that's a capital in Nigeria.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is a real smelting pot. It's just a crazy hubbub of... It's just frenetic. It is just a mass of humanity. It's just crazy place. Never seen anything like it, Dougie. Really, really seen anything like it. But anyway, he didn't have much patience, did the chief? And there we are. We're in the car with him. And we're driving on what could only be described as like a dual carriageway. It was two lanes of this road. And traffic up ahead was getting quite busy. And it started to slow down. He didn't have much patience. And next thing that had happened, everything just stopped around as the guys jumped off of the vehicles. They're standing there, they've got guns pointing at everybody, and it's like the seas just parted. And what he did, he didn't want to wait, so what he did, he turned all of the vehicles around, and we started driving back up the dual carriageway the wrong way, with traffic coming down to us. And Ron and I just kind of looked at one another and thought, you know, this is it, we are gonna die. But pleased to say, obviously, we didn't, and we certainly did have a drink when we got to the restaurant.
Did you have like,
stay with me forever.
Did you have like sirens and sort of things with this royal cavalcade?
just
things like that.
Just lights, and it was just mad. It was absolute madness. I honestly thought that I was going to die that night. I really, really did.
So the country itself, like so, Lagos. Is it Lagos?
Yes. Yeah.
So that was like a real sort of melting pot of sort of humanity as such. But was the country, is it, when you said there was like 100 tippers being used for construction, was that being used like sort of for like mass rebuilding infrastructure after conflict?
Yeah, there was a lot going on over in the Lagos port itself, but there was a lot of infrastructure being built, roads and things like this. The company that we worked for, that they put an awful lot back into the country for rebuilding, for schools, for hospitals, roads, all things like this. But obviously, being construction, it's a high-paying commodity. So kidnap for us when we were out there as well was quite high. So that's why we had to have the armed guards with us all the time. And when we were actually training on the road, we were going out with the drivers, there would be, Ron would have one truck and a driver, I'd be in the other. And in front of the trucks, there would be again a pickup with armed guards on them. And there'd be one behind us and so on and so forth. It was definitely different. Never known anything like it, but I've never felt so safe or so welcomed as well by all of the people that were there. It's the old adage, people who have nothing are the most generous, are the kindest people you'll ever meet.
That's absolutely true. That really runs through the whole of society. I mean, just going back, I remember when I used to be a paper boy and we all had our newspaper rounds around the village, and I had one of the newer housing estates, and one of the other boys had like the council houses where you had the people with the lowest incomes and a lot of pensioners and the people who had the least. And when it came to Christmas every year, they would tip the paper boy, and he would come home out of all of us. The people with the lowest incomes who had the least, the paper boy who delivered to them would come back with far, far more than any of the rest of us. They were just by far the most generous of all. And I've always found that, delivering in lorries, if you're taking things into people's houses, like washing machines or three-piece suites or things, and you'll get little old ladies who are trying to make you cups of tea, they're giving you cakes, trying to shove £5 notes in your hands to get a pint, and then you go up to the big posh house, and it's don't stand there, don't mark that. Is that where you're going to leave it? And it's like, where is the, it's obviously sort of born and bred into people, that, isn't it?
I think so.
People,
it's certainly an experience. And we went back, a couple of times.
Yeah, but so these were new daft tippers as well.
Yes, they were. We're going back about 9 years now.
Well, they've been CFs.
Yes, they were. Yeah, it was. And that'd come out of some of the vehicles that they'd come out of. They were all different types. And obviously they'd come over from the UK.
Yeah.
Their lives had ended and they had been put through the mill. And this was one of the things they just wanted to have, just a little bit of idea of how to look after these things, how to drive them.
Because of course all our vehicles, when we have no more use for them, seem to end up in Africa. Quite often,
they do.
Quite often they remove the emissions equipment and move things back, because obviously the quality of diesel sometimes over there isn't quite as good as well. So obviously you can't be having things like the AdBlue and stuff. So that must have been quite a revelation for a lot of these guys to get a brand new truck, considering that they would have had a lot of much, much older stuff. You probably would have seen old things like Leylands and Bedfords and
there
stuff like that.
There was all sorts there. I'd go back tomorrow without hesitation. I really, really would. I'll go back tomorrow.
Were there many projects like that where you would be sent abroad to do driver training?
Through DAF, I've been very lucky.
Yeah.
As I say, when I said my license would take me to places, it has. I spent time down in Taiwan, down there, and Mozambique, South Africa, Ghana, Nigeria, Europe, Texas.
Ooh.
Texas out there. So, yeah, all it's pinch me moments, Dougie. Seriously, pinch me moments. Really.
Great stuff. Yeah, that's really a good list of, fascinating list of countries. Ghana is a country that's always interested me. What's that like?
Very gentle, very colourful, very basic. The history in Ghana just blew my mind. It just blew my mind that was there. The wildlife. Each country that I've been to in Africa is so, so different, because that continent, obviously, it's so diverse. It's just, but the one thing that stays the same is the friendliness and the welcome that you get from the people that you're working with and that you meet along the way. The kindness and the friendliness that's there is just second to none.
Yes, and I really feel that with the way in Europe and the developed countries, in the way that we have progressed so much in terms of our efficiencies with the way that we use energy, that I think instead of trying to squeeze the very last bits of what we can do efficiency wise, you look at us with Euro 6 moving to Euros, trying to get to Euro 7, and same with power generation and everything. And I think for the developed countries, if we really wanted to make a difference to the environment and the climate overall, if it's a big concern, we should be helping these countries develop more modern technologies so that to bring them up closer to our standards, rather than us continually squeezing these last tiny little bits. It's bizarre how we were so happy to go and take a vehicle and take all the emissions equipment off it, which would be totally unacceptable to do in the UK, and give it to Africa, where it's absolutely fine, because it's not here. It doesn't matter over there. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Sometimes, though, some of the countries that we visited, the driving tests are quite different and they varied. I think down in Maputo, down in Mozambique, One of the drivers, his driving test was almost like a child's play mat, which they would have with the ropes on them. And they'd have the truck and they had a few questions and they had to maneuver this truck around an obstacle course on this kind of map table. And that's their driving test. And then they're out in a truck.
I'm quite curious. We've got a contributor who is going away to... Oh, well, it's something to do with transit. I think it's Zambia. Zambia.
Yeah.
Because a few years ago, I volunteered. Samworth decided to give away one of their old MANs, which had been used as a training vehicle. They decided to give it away to a company, charity over in Zambia, to use it as a training vehicle to increase the driving standards over there because the accident rates are just... absolutely horrific, like deaths on the roads are a daily occurrence. And at the time, I was told that they were actually getting. I said, "What kind of truck are they getting?" "Oh, they're getting like a really good one." "A good one." I said, "What is it? Like a new shape one?" And they're like, "Yeah, yeah." Because it was nothing of the sort. It was one of the older TGXs, but it had like an extra seat in it for the drivers. And we did a full photo shoot of me going to collect that truck from Samworth and taking it away wherever it was to be processed. Never heard anything about it again. So I was like, it wasn't a waste of a day, but I got the photographer Steve to come along and got a full set of photo shoots. Never heard anything else about it. So this contributor is away out to Zambia to see how the charity is getting on with training the drivers and improving things so they are safer on the roads, because like you say, like the driving test is almost non-existent.
Yeah.
And I said, go and do us a favour. I said, here's this MAN that I sent away to be exported 4 or 5 years ago. I don't suppose you can go and find out what happened to it. And he came back to me and says, yes, it's still alive and well.
It's still in
use today doing training. And I was like, oh, fantastic. I said, well, be sure to get me some pictures of it and find out how they're getting on with it and how things are going on with that over there. Yeah, because it is like it's the last wild frontier. Sort of, if you had guys who back in the 19th century would be exploring the Wild West in America and things like Africa, if you see some of the drives that people do going from north to south and everything, that is, if you're wanting sort of the ultimate driving challenge, I would say that's what it is, going to do Africa.
This was one of the things as well. It's like over here, when we go and meet customers and we go and see drivers and do training, you have a postcode, you have an address. When we were over there, we used to go truck jumping. So we used to have to meet up with all the different drivers and we'd be given coordinates. And again, we'd be put into a pickup. This is South Africa now. We'd be put into a pickup. You've got your supplies and everything. You'd be dropped off. And then as the trucks would come through, you jump onto the truck, you spend the time with the driver a couple of days, get dropped off again, and so on and so forth. And that's how we used to train, truck jumping, coordinates. And then we get picked up at the end of the week, 10 days later, everybody be picked back up and we go back into Johannesburg.
Yeah. Relatively high-risk occupation, that.
Any driving is, though, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I suppose.
Any driving is.
I suppose so.
Like I say, I've never, ever felt unsafe. The people that I've worked with always have, I've always been so well looked after. And the thing is, if they tell you not to do something, not to go somewhere, you don't go. You only get into trouble when you stray from the path.
Yeah.
Stray from the path. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. I'm sure that's interesting to note that. I'm sure there's probably situations where you've been in vehicles with the British press that you've felt more at risk than you ever have done in Africa.
I couldn't say. Not at all. No, I've been out with drivers of all sorts. I've been out with Witch Doctor. He really didn't like me. He really didn't want me on board and casted a spell, but none of the other guys...
A witch doctor?
A witch doctor, yeah, a proper witch doctor. He just didn't want me on board.
What was he like? Was he like a mobile witch doctor with his lorry?
Well, you saw his truck. It was full of everything that you could possibly think of. If you think of films where witch doctors have been involved and all of the different powders and the ground bones and the feathers and everything that they have, his cab was entirely like that. And as I say, he put a hex on me. He did not want me anywhere near that vehicle. But sadly, there you go. I did, and I'm still here. So I don't know what hex he put on me.
Hopefully the same sort of rules apply as with the emissions coming out the trucks, whereby they don't actually travel anywhere. They just sort of stay where they are with things like that. But South Africa's an interesting one as well. That's a country that's so rich in resources and so incredibly diverse as well, and it seems to be having a lot of problems at the moment. I've looked at like sort of being able to drive from the southern tip of South Africa, because I've got it. So because weirdly, South Africa, they've got, well, How much of Africa is left-hand drive compared to right-hand drive, or is it just a real mix?
It's a real mix, Dougie. It is. It's a real mix.
Yeah, because South Africa is right-hand drive, so it's the same as us, and they also had a lot of Opals, which is Vauxhall, which is, as you know, is my other big passion apart from lorries. These little Opel Corsa pickups, I'd kind of always really wanted one, and I thought, would it be possible to drive it from South Africa all the way, like, right up to Morocco, I guess, to get it into Europe? And I just looked at the amount of countries that you would have to pass through.
I'll keep you company. If ever you want to do it, I'll keep you company.
Right. Well, you've got the experience to go and do this, because I was thinking, would you kind of need to plan ahead and have a fixer ahead in some of these countries to make sure that you get through from one point to another, and you would need to carry like a secret stash of US dollars.
Well, you'd probably do better than I did, because, as I say, I was taken out of the truck when we went down to Maputo, down to the port in Mozambique. We stopped, there was three of us on the trucks, and we were going through, the two guys I was with, they went through no trouble, but I raised suspicion. So I was stopped, put into the compound, I was taken out, and I was held there for the day.
Where's that?
That was down in Maputo, down at the port, Mozambique.
Uh-huh.
They were a bit surprised to see a white person that filed down, and also they were surprised to see a white woman driving a truck, so it raised suspicion.
Mm.
So that was another day, sort of under, not armed guard there, but I was under armed guard. I couldn't go anywhere. Obviously, no mobile phones or anything. The guys that I were with were in the docks, didn't know what was going on. Papers, passport, everything taken. But they did look after me. They gave me a couple of cans of cold Coke throughout the day, which was very kind of them. And then they sent me on my way, but they wouldn't let me into the port itself. In the end, I was allowed to go onto the port.
They're just generally deciding to be suspicious, and when they'd run out of suspiciousness, they just got bored. They just got bored.
Yeah, kind of. You just go with the flow, really. Go with the flow. I've never felt really unsafe at all. Some hair-raising moments and some thinking, maybe, you know. But like I say, if you take the advice that you're given and you do as you're told, if anything does happen out of the norm, then you're going to be okay.
Because that would be, I think that would be my sort of ultimate driving adventure stroke challenge. There's guys who've driven from like Mexico to Alaska. There's guys that have done, well, you can't really do Russia anymore. I've got a very good friend of mine who he got fined in Russia for some sort of traffic offence and didn't pay it.
Okay.
In the end. So he can never go back to Russia now.
I mean, but you know, I mean, it, not that it's exactly high on his list of priorities anywhere. There's always a concern because he works in Asia down in Singapore, and I was like, you know, he lives in fear like one of these days there'll be some insane weather conditions where a hurricane or a volcano explodes, and the only place his plane can land is in Russia.
Yeah.
It'll be taken off the plane, and they'll be looking through the paperwork, and they'll be like, "Step this way, sir. You have you failed to pay a 10 rubles parking charge in Moscow in 2015, and you're now going to jail for 25 years in Siberia."
The one thing about Africa, wherever I always used to come back with nothing in my case, no clothes. Apart from what I was wearing as I left, because everything would be left behind, jeans, T-shirts, jackets, everything. All the clothes would be left behind for the guys or the gals that were there. Ron and I used to end up, when we used to go over in the end, we would always take more out and just give them to everybody that was out there that wanted them.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that's really good. Yeah, you do see on the charity appeals for things, you see the kids wearing all the different like British football team strips at complete random that they've got from charity places, which is, you know, it's a continent that's just got so much potential because it's got so many resources.
So diverse, it's ridiculous.
And it's concerning when you think about all the materials that we now need for electric going forward, but with all this cobalt and lithium, and then you hear about the exploitation and the mines, and you're thinking, well, these countries should be the ones that should be becoming, but you know, affluent and developed and like massively increasing standards of living if they have access to these sort of resources. But it's the countries that have already got all the money and resources that are going here and clearing up with it, unfortunately, with the bigger picture. And as I said, like, South Africa was somewhere I'd always kind of really wanted to go and get one of those vehicles. And that seems to be, that seems to be struggling with things at the moment as well, and it's one of these places where you do get the odd British truck turning up at random as well, because it was a market for Britain because it happened to be right hand drive, so you would see the odd good old Foden turning up here or there in these places, which obviously always fascinates me when they turn up in odd places.
But they do, they run them into the ground. You know, you've got fuel tanks being held on by strings and straps and bits hanging off and things missing, and you just think, how the hell are those trucks still going?
It's incredible how tough trucks really are, because when you look at the bodies on them, you see the videos on YouTube, and they've got whatever it is they can get their hands on. So they've got like American internationals, and then they might have, you know, they've got Scanias, DAFs, ERFs, Chinese things we've never heard of. And the bodies on them get filled right to the top and then some, so it's like pouring out the sides. Yep. And then they just run. I mean, these trucks are probably grossing over 50 tonnes all day long, every day. And they manage to keep on going and keep on doing it somehow. And here's us, they won't let you off the weighbridge in the quarry if you're 20 kilograms over.
different worlds.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but I might take you up on that. That's my bucket list adventure, is to buy a car in South Africa and drive it all the way back.
Let's do it.
Can it be done?
One way to find out.
Yeah, well, I guess there is only one way to find out. Yeah, no, I want to come. Want to come back again? Right enough.
You would. But no, yeah. So to say, I'm having a ball, very memorable, and I'll hope for a few more adventures before the keys. Put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, are you likely, with the driver training sort of things that you do now, is that still something that could potentially be on the cards to find yourself going out to a foreign country that may have purchased a job lot of DAFs for projects?
Oh, yeah. Yep, they still happen, they still come on. But a lot changed since COVID.
Mm.
Since then, travel does seem to go. But this is one of the things I do myself out of the job, though, Dougie, because I go to these places, we do setups, we put people in place, we train the people up to look after the drivers, and once they're up and running, we kind of do ourselves out of a job, you see.
Yeah, you're being too efficient.
Mind you, maybe it'd be good to just go along and touch base to see how they're getting on.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it did pique my curiosity, the TransAid story from Zambia about the truck, because if listeners, you're maybe not familiar with it, but TransAid is something that the transport industry does to support. It's generally charities sort of in developing nations sort of abroad, and it's quite often like directors of companies, they get involved with things where they do like really, really long cycle rides. I remember one of our traffic commissioners was involved with it. And I was always like, Welland Commercial Motor was doing some sort of cycle ride.
It was Will, wasn't it? He did it.
Yeah, Will did a cycle ride sort of thing. And I was like, I'm not in a cycle ride doing something. Get me a truck. I'll go in.
Because
I was, if anybody wants another one of those Samworth trucks, if they want it delivered by road, then hey, I'm your man. I'd be up for having a go at something like that. But like cycling for massive amounts of distances, I'm not sort of really into. I'm all about the trucks, really. That's the thing. Not so much trying to cycle your way across places like that. But yeah, if anything comes up Africa wise, that would be something I would find interesting. We do have I get the podcast stats as well, and it tells us a percentage of where everybody listens from. Oh. And it's like the majority is Britain, and then you've got Ireland, then it's Australia, New Zealand, USA, Canada, as you'd expect, going down the list. But there are small amounts of listeners in all sorts of different countries. There are a few guys out there. There must be one or two guys in Mozambique or Ethiopia or the Democratic Republic of Congo who are listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, quite possibly behind the wheel of some Foden Alpha that's still going strong out there after all this time. So yeah, Bill, I'd be somewhere I would love to explore hearing some of your adventures about that's gonna and other things recently is kind of really intrigued me with that. Well, it's been fantastic to have you on the podcast. It's been wanting to get you on for quite some time, and I hope I'll probably be catching up with you at an event of some sort before too long anyway.
Absolutely.
I think we've got a load of special bumper issues on the cards again this year, and I think we've got a DAF one booked in for that as well. So we'll be on the lookout, folks, for the full range of DAF trucks to cover in the magazine, whether you've got an LF or an XB, as the new ones are now called.
Absolutely, an XB.
CFs, XFs, XDs, new XFs, XGs, everything, all the way up from the smallest rigids up to big heavy haul outfits. We're looking for DAF material for that. So if that fits the bill as well, please do get in touch with us through the regular channels. Cool. Well, it's been great to catch up with you.
Dougie, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to having you on board soon.
Cool, lovely stuff. Cool, Rick. Catch you later. Cheers. Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the Truck and Driver podcast, proudly sponsored by TomTom. As a special thanks to our listeners for trucking through the holiday season, we're giving away 1 month free of TomTom Go Navigation Truck. Simply download the Go Navigation app and use the code TRUCKYEAH. That's TRUCKYEAH when subscribing. Safe travels, folks.